This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. With you, my name is Brandon, and on the other line, it's my good buddy Josh.
Hey, Brandon, how are you?
Now, you're telling me you're a little high energy right now because you just had a shot of vitamin C, more or less.
I did. It's clementine season, and I am taking advantage of it.
There's something about the clementine where the peel or the skin just sort of falls off.
Yeah, so you're into a clementine, and you're out in about 45 seconds. An orange, it's like 20 minutes. It's a huge process.
So is this what you've been up to this entire international break, just eating fruit, feeling good?
I'm just getting my vitamin C up. I mean, we're about to head into the stretch run here of, you know, something like 20 fixtures and, you know, 18 weeks or something like that. So,
I feel like this is the first. I'm in agreement with you. It's going to be exhausting, but I feel like it's well-deserved because I was going to ask you if you feel like this is the first international break of this FPL season where you just you're kind of sick of it.
I'm always sick. I never want the international breaks. They're just too long.
There was something
they break up the season so much.
Yeah, it's true. But there was something about the Euro Cup qualifying during the last break that sort of made it entertaining.
And you had a little bit of that this time too. I mean, it was cool to see Ireland qualify yesterday.
Yes, for sure.
John Walters and Ciarán Clarke.
Yeah, you put a great tweet out on the Always Cheating Twitter at Hail Cheaters that it was basically the 2011-2012 season all over again.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny because whenever I think of that season, I always think about Jonathan Walters having what must be the worst. We'll probably talk about this in an earlier podcast, but what has to be the single worst game week a player has ever had, which is that I think he missed two penalties and had an own goal and a yellow card.
Yeah.
So I think he ended up with like at least a minus four. It could have been even more than that.
That's very much like a contestant on Jeopardy that doesn't make it into Final Jeopardy because he has negative dollars. You know what I'm
I know,
talking
it's so
about.
Sad. Like, and they always like they make them like leave, you know, for the last.
Yeah. You can just leave the stage now. Thank you very much.
They can't even like write "Hi, Mom" on their thing.
Speaking of
this is all good stuff.
This is great stuff. Speaking of great stuff, during the break, we did have the opportunity to watch the U.S. men's national team play their first World Cup qualifier against St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Yes, the country that sounds the most like a band.
And it was shaping up to be a really interesting game because within, what, like the first 3 minutes, St. Vincent actually scored a goal.
But
Brad Guzan.
Yeah, I think once they scored that goal, like that was it. They knew they couldn't win this match, and U.S. scored six more goals after that. It was kind of a laid back. We went to this soccer convention in Brooklyn called BlazerCon this weekend.
Yeah, hosted by the somewhat famous Men in Blazers. They run, I guess it's probably the biggest soccer podcast here in the States.
Yeah, it was. I was excited, but I have to say I was a little wary about the conditioning going into it. I didn't really know what to expect. They had been talking a lot about people dressing like full kit wankers, you know, showing up like in the outfit of the Team Sport.
From the shirt to the socks.
And there was very little of that. And I don't know. It was mostly people like us, I have to say, a lot of like kind of dorky 30-something guys wearing blazers and sometimes with a soccer scarf.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was great. It was a fantastic celebration of the sport we love. And so, if they do BlazerCon next year, we're definitely going.
Yeah. And what was there a highlight for you, a particular moment?
I really enjoyed, there was a panel where they had producers and some of the personalities from the NBC Sports Network mm-hmm. who put together the coverage of the Premier League every Saturday, Sunday, Monday here in the States.
Right.
And that was cool to get a behind-the-scenes look at what is on my television when I'm sitting on the couch every weekend morning.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredible thing because as an American, we actually have a better experience. The sporting experience as an American and for the Premier League is a better experience than you get for any other sport in America. If you want to watch, you know, if you live in New York and you support teams who are based mainly in Michigan, as I do, you have to pay some crazy fee to get those games, like $100+ every year. You know, if you want to watch any team that isn't like, you know, during the NFL games, it's just the two matches that are on and that's it. If you want to watch more than that, you either have to legally stream it or go to a bar.
Yeah.
But if you want to watch the Premier League, literally every single game is on. You miss absolutely nothing. So it's really fun as a fantasy player because there's no moment when you can't, you know, you can't have like one screen on and then a picture in picture and then something on your iPad. You can basically watch every single game from your own home.
Right. Yeah, there were other cool things that happened at BlazerCon. We actually got to see Roberto Martinez from Everton speak about what it's like to manage in the Premier League.
And Ralph Kruger, the chairman of Southampton, was awesome.
And don't downplay, in light of that, the chairman of Bournemouth. What was his name? Jeff Motson?
Something like that.
Jeffrey
Mostyn, yeah.
He seemed to be there just on a shopping
trip
with
Mostyn?
His wife.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. So anyway, it was a great opportunity for us to press the flesh, give out some always cheating buttons that we have put up there on our Twitter and Instagram if you want to check those out. And speaking of giving things away, I wanted to mention the Topps trading card company. They were there with a vendor booth at this convention showing off their Topps Kick trading cards. And the poster child for all of their signage was Eden Hazard. And I kind of felt bad for whoever was the mastermind of that marketing campaign, given how crummy Hazard has been this season.
You had to think that was the safest bet of all the players. You know, who would be a more reliable, consistent player than Eden Hazard, given what he'd shown up until, you know, this year?
It's true. We will actually touch upon this and then some in just a moment when we talk about our first annual Always Cheating FPL Awards third of the season edition, about who have been the highs and lows of our FPL teams.
Yeah, should we get right into it?
I suppose so. We have to welcome anybody who's newly listening to the podcast. If you discovered Always Cheating through this poll, we had a great response after we posted it to our site at alwayscheating.com. And yeah, Josh, you just kind of came up with these questions, you know, you're off the dome.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was mostly just looking at the risers and five. You know, I basically just spent some time with the FPL on the FPL site, looking at different stats and seeing who had risen, who had fallen, and you know, based on my own kind of crummy experiences here too, it kind of informed some of the snarkier answers here. We put it up on a few different places. I do want to say thank you to a lot of people on Reddit because we posted in the FPL Reddit forum, and a lot of people were very kind and seemed to go to the website and check it out. So that was very cool too.
Awesome. Yeah, we're happy to have you listening. I hope you enjoy it. So we're going to run through the results of this poll before we get to our optimizer for game week 13. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about the fixtures that are coming up as the Premier League returns this weekend. But how should we do this, Josh? You just want me to read the ballot nominees for each of these categories, and then we can talk about what the results were?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, so our first annual Always Cheating FPL Awards, third of the season edition. The first category is
I didn't feel like waiting until the midway point. You know, and the midway point always comes in like late December when you've got like, you know, four fixtures in 11 days. And so, you know, it's like the next thing you know, and all of a sudden you're at like the 25th week or whatever.
Hey,
so
God knows if we'll still be podcasting then anyway. So let's strike while the iron is hot. So, and I mean, the international break, as it was, this gave us something to do.
Right, right.
So here we are, the FPL MVP at the third season of the mark. You started with the big million-dollar question here, Josh. So our nominees are Jamie Vardy, Riyad Mahrez, Alexander Kolarov, Odion Ighalo, and Mesut Ozil.
All right, and so
did you have any predictions going into this?
This was kind of the easiest one to predict, I will say. So the winner with 54.5% of the vote was Jamie Vardy.
Woo!
No real surprise there. Scoring 9 weeks in a row is probably going to be enough to win the award.
FPL managers love consistency.
Yeah, absolutely. And close behind with 39.9% of the vote was Riyad Mahrez. So we had about, I'd say we had just under 360 respondees to the poll, would you say? And so 195 votes went to Jamie Vardy and 143 went to Mahrez.
I think it basically comes down to which Leicester player did you get in early?
Yeah.
And siphon the most points off of.
Yeah.
I personally voted for Jamie Vardy, because I like to have an open ballot. And mm-hmm. I'm happy to share these my thoughts and opinions with you.
You believe in an open ballot.
Mm-hmm. I do, totally. As I jokingly said, FPL managers love consistency, and good God, I do more than anything. And this guy's on such a streak. How can you not make him your MVP? I know how you can't because you're resisting.
I too agree in an FPL Gladnost approach, and I went with Riyad Mahrez for my vote. Mostly, I guess, selfishly because he's done more for me than Jamie Vardy has, and I'm still bitter at Vardy for doing so well all year, even though I basically like him. How can you not like Vardy and Mahrez? What a weird combination. Like, how those two have combined to keep Leicester in third place through 12 weeks of the season. I mean, Leicester, like, actually could – I mean, I guess they –
why not?
Why not them, right? I mean, they've lasted about as long as any of these teams have. You know, I mean, I know that Southampton was right up there in those Champions League spots in the first 15, 20 weeks of last season, but yeah. They never really had enough offense, I don't think. So if Leicester can hang tough and then maybe bring in, I don't know, maybe one more, like a second striker, or a back, you know, some like a backup attacker or something like that.
Or somebody who can in play January. Defense.
Maybe someone who could, yeah, actually, that's true. The defense may end up being what cost them. It's sort of the reverse of what Southampton had last year.
They're having a Liverpool season in that regard. The Suarez-Sturridge sort of mentality of we will let in the goals, but we'll still outscore you.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the results are they're greater than the sum of their parts, but even from a fantasy perspective, it's been pretty awesome. It's really just been those two. I guess Mark Albrighton to a smaller extent.
Speaking of the 54.5% of the vote that Jamie Vardy got, going back to this BlazerCon convention, mm-hmm. it's a testament to how good the football is that Vardy is playing that we saw a couple like little kids at this convention wearing Jamie Vardy jerseys. Uh-huh. Now, as we know, Vardy didn't cover himself in glory this summer with a few racist remarks and whatnot, but everyone right. seems to have forgiven him for this.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
Not that it's our place to forgive or not forgive. I don't mean to make it like that, but
yeah. I mean, like, I don't think I'd want to hang out with this guy. now, Mahrez, I feel like that guy, he seems kind of cool, doesn't he?
I have
no
idea.
He seems smart.
How do you know? Have you heard him interviewed?
Yeah, well, I haven't heard him interviewed, but I have an audio book. He read actually the entire Remembrance of Things Past, the Proust.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he's got a kind of a second career. He was worried, I think, early on that he wouldn't be able to make it as a as a footballer, and so but he's got this wonderful voice, as I'm sure you know. Sonorous,
I have heard that.
I think
yeah.
you'd say. He does a lot of Proust. He does a little Goethe. And he does a lot of Tolstoy.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Would you describe his voice as sort of dulcet?
No, I wouldn't,
actually. More of a baritone or more of a soprano, maybe?
It's actually, it's extremely high. It's It's window shatteringly high, but somehow it works. You know,
somehow it works. There you go. So to our listeners out there, keep an eye out for the next audiobook coming from Riyad Mahrez. All right. Yeah. So how did these other guys in the poll do?
I think less than 5% total goes to Mesut Ozil, picked up 14 points. Odion Ighalo only picked up 5 points, which actually seems like Odion Ighalo's underrated season continues, I will say. I mean, you know, I know that it's not like no one's talking about him, but we really aren't giving him quite enough credit, I think, for how phenomenal he's been this year.
Yeah, I'd say even people who have him as their third striker would still consider him basically third chair to second and first.
I mean, if Jamie Vardy just was not playing in the Premier League this year, we would all have Ighalo.
Yes.
I mean, he's absolutely filling that spot.
Yes, agreed.
And then Alexander Kolarov picked up one vote.
I believe that he was given this one vote just so we could hold a quorum. Is that right?
No, well, someone gave him a proper vote. So fair enough to them.
I mean, the guy started the season with a real shot. It just sort of evaporated when he was injured.
Yeah, through the first, I guess, like 7 or 8 weeks of the season, if we had had like a sixth of the season poll, I think he would have cleaned up.
All right, so there it is, your MVP at the third of the season, Jamie Vardy with a bullet.
All right.
And Mara's close behind. Our second category is best new player. It wasn't a huge surprise here for best new player, but I'll just list the candidates and then you can walk us through the results, Josh.
Okay.
So we had Kevin De Bruyne, Dimitri Payet, Andre Ayew, again, Odion Ighalo. He's like running for every open seat here in the poll. And then Johan Caboy.
Caboy.
My boy, Johan Caboy.
Johan, your boy.
And then Johan Cabaye 2.0, as you list him, because he is not your Newcastle Johan Cabaye.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me until later that Kevin De Bruyne should have also been Kevin De Bruyne 2.0.
It's true.
Everyone forgets that he was on that Chelsea team.
So who won?
So the winner by a runaway winner by almost 70% more than the rest of the vote was Dimitri Payet, who finished with 284 votes, more than 250 more than the next closest player, which was Kevin De Bruyne, who just edged out Odion Ighalo by one vote. So those two had about 8% of the vote each.
You can't really be surprised here. I mean, I feel like De Bruyne was positioned to maybe be the best new player, but the last month he's just been delivering an assist here, an assist there, few goals, and then you compare that to Payet, who, again, is ultra-consistent and is the leader of that West Ham team. Yeah, De Bruyne just seems to be a role player right
now. It's another example of the way the international break can just utterly stop a team's momentum or I guess help it pick up momentum. You know, De Bruyne going into the last international break was on an incredible run. I think he had double figure returns in 3 out of 4 games. And, you know, the match before, you know, the game with Gate was the famous Aguero 5-goal match, but De Bruyne had 16 points in that match himself. And I know there are a lot of people who actually captained De Bruyne that week. And
he shinned a goal in. I remember that.
And but he scored a great goal too, if I recall. I think his second goal was fantastic.
Yeah, off his shin.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, I think there was a question whether that was a shot or a pass, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure he meant it, but I think people would argue with me.
It looked awesome, but then coming out of the break, I think he had something maybe like 2 assists in the last 4 games, and I think basically all 4 of those games outside of the Manchester derby were huge fixtures. I mean, the kind of fixtures that, I mean, you captained him for at least one of those. And
I did.
Yeah, you certainly could have captained him away to Aston Villa.
Yeah, I think the last couple of weeks where he was a top captaincy choice, people had just lost faith with him enough.
So, and then way below De Bruyne and Ighalo was Andre Ayew, who picked up just 8 votes.
Yeah, another guy who started like a house on fire and then petered out along with the rest of the Swansea team. But I feel bad. I like Ayew as a player. I hope that he finds a bit more form as the season goes on. And and we'll get to this question later on, maybe if they have a new manager there at Swansea, it could help.
Yeah, and he played the full 90 for Ghana today. You just never know. Maybe international break. Sometimes it shakes teams up a little bit, gets them out of their, you know, the funk that they're in. So I think like most fans, at least fans in America, I don't know how Swansea is perceived in the UK or elsewhere. I always pull for Swansea. They're kind of my second club. You know, they're the one that that I often find myself rooting for, basically against anyone that's not Arsenal.
Yeah, everyone seems nice. Jonjo Shelvey, he has no hair.
He has alopecia, doesn't he?
Okay. And then, of course, we have a quorum here with Johan Kabay.
Mm-hmm.
With one vote.
Poor Johan.
Let's see. I haven't looked at this poll fully just yet. I'm curious to see if any of these got zero votes.
I can answer that for you right now, and I will say no, that no one has.
That's great. Everybody gets a vote. So everyone goes home at least knowing that somebody out there values them. Okay, so your best new
Kabay was late, actually. He was a zero until something like the 337th vote came in.
And somebody it was like clicking on an ad on your smartphone. You didn't mean to, but you accidentally clicked it.
So I just want to see the results.
Suddenly you're on some retail page. There you go. Okay, so your best new player of the 2015-2016 season is Dimitri Payet, 79.3% of the votes. Josh, why don't you take us through the next category here?
All right, the next category is most improbable FPL moment. So this is kind of a complicated one, but basically, you know, that's in the first 12 weeks of the season, we've actually seen a lot of very interesting moments, a lot of things that we've never seen in the 5 years we've been, you know, playing in the fantasy league. You and I, that is. So I'll run through all five of them very quickly. First one is Sergio Aguero versus Newcastle, famous game week 8 performance, 5 goals, 25 points.
Having trouble remembering that one, but please go ahead.
Yeah, I'll send you a clip afterwards. The next one is Odion Ighalo contributing to every Watford goal from game week 1 to game week 11.
Staggering.
Would have been a little better if he'd contributed the goal in game week 12. It kind of threw this one off a little bit. But 1 through
made
11.
A little less improbable.
Mm-hmm. Third option is the complete collapse of Chelsea's fantasy assets.
Mm-hmm.
Famously, as we all know, and possibly lead to the ruin of Jose Mourinho.
We have talked about it.
Or Jose Mourinho, depending on how you want to say it. Then we have Jamie Vardy scoring in 9 consecutive matches.
Improbable.
And Mesut, perhaps most improbable, Mesut Ozil finally becoming a reliable FPL asset.
I think maybe I voted for the Mesut Ozil one. I can't remember. It was either that or the Chelsea assets.
Yeah, I can't remember who you voted for either.
Had I voted for the Chelsea assets, I would have been part of the winning constituency here. So with 53.4% of the votes, the complete collapse of the Chelsea fantasy assets voted as your most improbable FPL moment thus far this season, which...
I was a little surprised by that, to be honest. I could have seen that answer winning, but to win by that staggering of a number was a little surprising to me. It had almost doubled the second most selected.
I think the key word here is improbable. So if you look at Chelsea's performance last FPL season versus this season, and if you told me last season we'd be looking at this, I would say that's improbable.
It's very improbable.
Now, if you told me Sergio Aguero was going to score 5 goals at home against Newcastle, I would say probable. I'd believe it.
I mean, the Jamie Vardy one is Jamie Vardy scoring in 9 consecutive matches finished second. That picked up 24.9% of the vote to 53% for the Chelsea answer. That one, you know, this were 2 years ago and it was Robin Van Persie scoring in 9 consecutive matches, I could see that not being quite as dramatic, or even Sergio Aguero scoring in 9 consecutive matches. But for a guy like Jamie Vardy to be setting records in the Premier League is pretty extraordinary. I mean, I know he was on a bit of a hot streak at the end of last season, but
yeah.
You know, like, people are not, it's not entirely a joke, this idea that, you know, Real Madrid is looking at him now as a backup striker option in January if they need one. You know, I mean, he, you know, maybe
Where'd
Jamie
you read
Vardy
that one?
I read that somewhere. One of those garbage transfer pages, I'm sure.
Is that Mahrez's audiobook?
Kareem Benzema may be going to jail soon. They may need a backup striker. Coming third with 13.7% of the vote was Sergio Aguero versus Newcastle. An amazing moment, a moment that many of us will cherish. Especially because I think it may be the only time this season when one of my captains has actually delivered points for me.
Yeah. Excruciating if you didn't captain Aguero in this game.
Absolutely. It was either the best moment or the worst moment of the season for you.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think to make this moment improbable, the Aguero 5 goals, you have to point out that a majority of the goals came in the span of, what, like 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, I think four of them came after halftime and before maybe the 60th minute. It was after the 60th minute, but it was maybe the 65th minute. It was pretty early on in the game when he got subbed.
Yeah, so the stretch of time makes it kind of improbable, but we've seen this sort of point output from Aguero before. And that's what, for me, takes it solidly out of the running.
Yeah, I suppose that is true.
Now talk about Mesut Ozil finally becoming a reliable FPL asset.
That one finished fifth with only 8 votes. Ozil with only 8 people were really blown away. And I guess part of that might just be that in lieu of the other options, that was not the it's still pretty improbable to me.
It is improbable. It's a little bit of a strange one, and I think it might be a testament to how kind of uninteresting Ozil has been over the last year. Like, yeah. Everyone kind of thought he was good and going to be good. We invested in him. Then he turned out to not be performing, so we uninvested.
Well, people always
say... We got rid.
The line, you know, last year when he didn't have a particularly good season from a fantasy point of view was that, you know, he does things that don't show up on the score sheet. Mm-hmm. You know, that he... That, you know, his passing is so precise and he's in control of the offense. And
he's just a good buddy in the locker room.
Good person in the locker room.
He brings farm fresh eggs from home.
Yeah, exactly. He's all about, you know, yeah, he's a winner or whatever. But, you know.
I love how you equate farm fresh eggs with being a winner. That's good.
But he, you know, didn't score a lot of goals or have a ton of assists last year. And he had a reputation, deserved or not, for not showing up in big games. So I think that, yeah, I mean, you were one of the few. You had him on week one, if I'm not mistaken.
I did have him on week one, and he was. I've mentioned this before on the pod, and that he was my Arsenal differential, more or less, because everyone was big upping Arsenal at the start of the season, and I knew everyone was going to have a lot of Arsenal assets. And there Ozil was. Despite him kind of being a bust last year, the potential is there. He's a world class soccer player, a World Cup winner. And I was just lucky that he came good, and now I've been making money hand over fist with him in my squad.
Yeah, so what is his price up to now? It's like 8.8?
8.9.
8.9. You bought him at 8.0?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, wow.
Wait, no, 8.5. No, I bought him at 8.5. But still. The thing with him is he actually dipped in value, I think, and now it's sort of like Graziano Pella style. He had to dip. He had to hit rock bottom before he could go up.
Yeah, he put his hand up on your hip, then when he dipped, you dipped, we dipped.
So let's see, it'll be interesting to see if Ozil can keep this up, but you feel like he definitely will. He looks integral to the offense right now.
I totally agree. I may still end up bringing him in. It kind of depends on what we find out about Aguero. We'll get to that when we start talking about the Game Week 13 preview. What I voted for finished fourth out of fifth with only 21 votes. That was Odi Ighalo contributing every Watford goal from Game Week 1 to Game Week 11. And I just think for any team to have gone through the first 11 weeks of the season where every single goal they scored was either scored or assisted by one player is pretty extraordinary. I mean, I guess if this were, you know, Italy in 1992 or something, when, you know, every game was 1-0, that would be one thing. But I mean, you know, many of these Watford games, I know they've had a couple 0-0 games thrown in there too. So it's not like they're winning every game 5-0 and he has, you know, 35 goals this season. But if they're scoring, Odi Ighalo has contributed to it. I will argue that he's maybe the luckiest player in the Premier League this season. I mean, how many goals has he scored in a goalkeeper mistake or a defender mistake this year? It seems like he scored like 4 or 5 goals. And granted, part of that is a good player knows, you know, a good striker is able to poach. And,
you make your own luck.
Yeah, you make your own luck. But that being said, he's been lucky.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm still finding it difficult to be interested in Agallo, though this poll is certainly making a compelling case. He keeps popping up in every category.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, so next category, biggest disappointment.
This is one of the closest races.
Okay, so the nominees here are Eden Hazard, Jordan, is that how you say it? Jordan Shaqiri?
It's pronounced Jordan.
Jordan Shaqiri. Air Jordan himself, Jordan Shaqiri. I've never been asked to say that man's first name before. Here I am.
I think I say the X like a Z, probably incorrectly, like Zerdan Shaqiri.
And then
Zerdan Shaqiri, by the way, was the one who came down and battled Superman in Superman 2. Yeah,
he slipped out of that pane of glass that was just floating in space. And
yeah, it's yeah,
that's incredible. And also on the list here, Memphis Depay, Aaron Ramsey. How did Aaron Ramsey make it in here?
I don't know. I think I needed a fifth option.
You just pulled it out of your hat.
He has been very disappointing this year. I think he's only scored one goal in 12 weeks.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Okay. And then the last option is literally every.
These are fantasy options after all, remember?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not like we called up Aaron Ramsey's loved ones and said, like, can you confirm that he's just not around the house very much, not helping out with the chores?
Right, sleeping around. Yeah.
Yeah, just being a general doofus. All right, so I think I voted here for literally every player on Chelsea.
So it was neck and neck right up until the end, and just at the very end there was a late surge, and literally every player in Chelsea defeated Eden Hazard. Or
the team biggest, will always conquer the individual.
Biggest disappointment on the season. So little every player on Chelsea picked up 43.9% of the vote. Eden Hazard picked up 41.3%. So all told, 85% of the people who voted in this poll voted for someone on Chelsea, whether that was the entire team or just Eden Hazard.
It's remarkable. This is, of course, a theme. Chelsea have been dog shit, big disappointment. Everyone is aware of that. Your voices have been heard.
Yeah, and the Eden Hazard thing, I feel like the people who selected him tended to be people who had him, and people like me, who had him on their team for way too long. You know, he had that 10-pointer against Arsenal in game week, whatever it was, 7 or something. And, you know, he had 2 assists 2 weeks in a row. And it was, I mean, you were just being teased along. You were just getting enough, you know, like just enough to hold on to him. And it's not like, yeah, I mean, in the end, he has a goal and 3 assists on the season, at least from I know the goal has been whatever it's called, disallowed or just
the dubious, you know, goals committee got together and
they get together for drinks once a month, and they decided that it was too dubious.
Too dubious. I like a picture of a man banging a gavel and saying too dubious.
So a goal and 3 assists, which is obviously not good, but given that he's 11.5, given how you kind of had to build your team around him, and given how much his value has dropped, holding on to him,
given how many of us have. The Topps Kicks cards have built their entire marketing campaign around him.
Yes, exactly, as established. So you can see why Eden Hazard would actually be right up there, neck and neck with literally every player in Chelsea.
Yeah. But then you sympathize. The reason I would vote for the literally every player side is because with a team like Chelsea, you think, okay, Hazard, he was last season's MVP. If he's not performing, then somebody else on that Chelsea team must be picking up the slack. And everyone's been burned by picking up other Chelseas here and there. I mean, Ivanovic or even Azpilicueta, though, you had some returns from him.
So were you how many players on Chelsea did you have on your team to start the season?
I only had Eden Hazard, actually.
I had 9. So for me, it's been very tough.
Whoa, you played your nine Chelsea players chip early in the season?
I played my
all out Chelsea chip.
Yeah, my septuple captain chip. No, I think I had 3, or maybe I just had 2. I guess I had Hazard and Azpilicueta. I mean, Azpilicueta at the beginning of the season seemed like an incredible value. You know, a six million defender on Chelsea was going to start every week, and
bonus points, assists. Despite not getting clean sheets?
Yep, exactly. So now they're about to go on this run. And actually, this is a Twitter question someone asked. We'll get to this in a few minutes. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard for me to bring Hazard back in. I mean, I would need to see.
You have to be really be hunting for a differential because there's just too many other things out there to like put on your plate.
It would be like, I'd have to be like pretty stone cold to bring in his art at this point. Like I would
Mark,
have to really,
like Mark Johnson, stone cold stunner.
Yeah. I would have to like check my emotion at the door in order to bring his art back in.
All right. Here's my question for you. If we strip Chelsea out of this question, we're left with Jordan Shaqiri, Memphis Depay, Aaron Ramsey. Who are you going to vote for? Otherwise, it's gotta be Depay.
And yeah. It's
40, yeah, 41 sure. of you agreed.
Yep. So that was almost 12%. So you got a pretty large chunk of that vote too. And I'm sure that's like a mix of Man United fans and people who were tempted by, I think he started at 8 million or it's either 8 or 8.5 in the season.
It's just it's a disappointment to the game in general because, well, first of all, United are about as unsexy as a team can get right now. Yeah. And Depay in the summer was the player that was promising to bring that sex appeal.
Yep.
To their offense, and he's been totally invisible.
Yeah, he really has. So he was at 8.5 to start the season. He's actually all the way down to 8 million now.
Which is a testament to how many people brought him in at the start of the season, right?
How many minutes do you think he's played in the last 4 weeks total?
Good question. I will say 32.
Zero.
What?
He has not played for 4 weeks in a row.
What is he doing?
I know. So huge disappointment.
He's in the squad though, right?
Yeah, he is in the as far as I know. Yeah. I mean, I think he's just, I don't know if how much of that's form and how much of that's personality. I mean, I know that he has a
like Depay's reputation of being a party boy and he's wearing funny hats around town, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but like, has he actually done anything that's bad at all?
I have no idea. All right, so those are our biggest disappointments. Chelsea is top of the list, and the next category here. Why don't you take us through?
Okay, when game week 25 rolls around, we're at the 2/3 mark of the season. Who is going to be the overall points leader? And the options are Sergio Aguero, Jamie Vardy, Romelu Lukaku, Alexis Sanchez, or, and this one I'm excited about, other.
Other. That's such a cop out, Josh. You could have put Aaron Ramsey there.
I was trying to restrict it to that one you just had to pick one. I mean, you could have other for all of these. Yeah. Like biggest disappointment, you just throw other on there.
Dude, this category is the best category because it is so evenly dispersed. It's really exciting to see the diversity of opinion.
It is.
I'm real genuinely excited. Listen, I'm wonky, but I like polls.
All right, let's see it. Why don't you give off the winners?
Okay, so actually, let's take it from the bottom. So the farthest down the poll was other with 52 votes. Now that's just
but still 14.5% though,
which is a huge margin. And that's a big piece of the pie. We're looking at the pie chart right now, and I'm being deeply honest with you about that. So with 14.8% of that pie is Romelu Lukaku. So he's in fourth place. Moving up upward, I'm actually surprised. Alexis Sanchez in third place here, and he has got how big is his slice of the pie? 18.4%. Now, Sanchez is explosive player. And, you know, how many more hat tricks does he have in him? I mean, you can't tell. Maybe a lot.
Maybe a little.
But people seem to be banking on Jamie Vardy keeping his consistency going. And he is second only to Sergio Aguero. So if you look at the pieces of the pie from Aguero versus Vardy, Vardy has 24.6% of the vote and Sergio Aguero 27.7% of the vote.
And I will say, Brennan, as I was tallying the votes, it was actually even closer than it looks now. Jamie Vardy and Sergio Aguero were within one vote of each other. It was kind of going back and forth for a good 100 votes. You can imagine my excitement as I was tallying these.
Yeah, Aguero had his people out there just littering the internet with flyers. Vote for me.
it's really a testament to. Well, it's testament to the 5-goal game and the fact that he is Sergio Aguero that in the face of him being injured for God knows how long, maybe he's back this weekend. Maybe he'll be back in 6 weeks. Who knows?
Yeah, I think we were talking about this like every week we have to discuss the Aguero question and how to get him back in your team and how everyone is basically turning their teams upside down for a guy who, if you take those five goals against Newcastle away, has done largely nothing.
has not scored in 10 of the 12 game weeks so far this season.
Yeah.
Granted, some of those are through injury, but still. I mean, injuries are part of what you get with him, so, you know, you can't discount it.
Yeah, and in the face of all that, I still can't argue with these numbers.
I think I voted for Aguero myself.
I voted for Jamie Vardy.
And, oh, you did?
Okay. Yeah, again, consistency is king, mm-hmm. and if that Leicester City, whether they win or not, continues to fire offensively, he's going to keep getting those goals.
That's true. I like that. Should we just start calling Jamie Vardy consistency is king?
Absolutely. Right. Jamie Vardy having a consistency party.
All right. So Sergio Aguero, yep, edges out consistency is king with Alexis in third and Romelu Lukaku in fourth. I could have added Riyad Mahrez as well. I thought I just wanted some different options. But Mahrez, I think, is another underdog candidate for being the overall points leader just because he's just so sneaky effective at scoring goals. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's so easy for him to score goals.
Yeah.
You know?
So Mahrez
on the right, you know.
Mahrez basically got 52 votes, I'm guessing. Like other is replaced by Raheed Mahrez.
Yeah, I mean I'm wondering who else you could even put in there. You know, I guess you could look at maybe a defender, like, you know, someone like Chris Smalling even might be able to you know, get in there.
Yeah, or George R. Russell Martin, maybe?
Yep, George, a couple more goals from Martin.
Absolutely. He had the hot hand for a while there.
He did. He was the hot stepper, as they say.
All right, we've got three more categories here, so let's get through these. The next category is player most likely to become a top fantasy asset. Right. So looking ahead to the next two-thirds of the rest of the season, we've got Eden Hazard, Jordan Henderson, assuming he gets his foot together.
Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be coming back soon.
So what is the actual prognosis there? A couple of weeks, couple of
it's
months?
It's like Aguero. I mean, you just keep hearing that they're getting close, that it's almost, they're almost ready, and then Friday comes around and they're not quite ready yet.
So then we've got Diego Costa, Memphis Depay, and Matt Ritchie giving some love to the Cherry fans out there.
Mm-hmm.
So who wins this category? Who wins this race?
It was kind of close for a while, but in the end, Eden Hazard was the runaway winner. He picked up 38.2% of the vote, 134 votes total.
So, there's a race car.
Oh yeah, sorry. I'm podcasting this from my motorcycle. Sorry about that.
So this is just a testament to how people can't let Chelsea go just yet, despite the results of our earlier question.
And maybe they shouldn't. I mean, their fixtures coming up are fantastic.
Yeah, the law of averages generally does not lie to you. To you specifically, Josh. To me, it has lied numerous times. But I do find this hard to argue with.
Yeah,
Hazard, like you were having that own internal debate on the podcast just a few minutes ago about bringing Hazard back into your squad. I think people might do it.
Second behind Hazard is Jordan Henderson, who picked up 84 votes. He had 23.9% of the vote. I guess Hazard and Henderson are both kind of reputation picks. You know, we both, expect them to come good. I mean, with Henderson, it made more – well, who knows now? I mean, you know, it made more sense at the beginning of the season when we knew how we fit into a Brendan Rodgers – you know, attack, especially with Steven Gerrard gone. Now with Klopp, I'm not quite as sure. I mean, I still feel pretty confident that he'll be, you know, on some set pieces. I mean, it's not like that team is totally set on offense. I think they would love to have Henderson.
A little bit of magic. I agree.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he could score a lot of points when he finally comes back. And I think there's always a chance he could come back this weekend. So we shall see.
If 53 of you out there, and I want you to all show yourselves, voted for Diego Costa. Who are you people? And what are you on?
Yeah, I know. I mean, outside of that Aston Villa game, we just have not seen it from Costa this year.
No, that guy is hot, sweaty garbage.
You really hate Diego Costa, don't you?
He flies in the face of everything that's beautiful in sport.
I think as a Midwesterner, you have a particularly hard time with
Acosta. He definitely offends the...
He's so rude.
Yeah, he is so rude. And with Thanksgiving on the horizon for us here in the States, he is probably top FPL asset who I would not like at my Thanksgiving dinner table.
I don't know. You know, what did...
That should have been a question on this poll, for God's sake.
Okay. So, then tied for fourth, were Memphis Depay with 40 votes and Matt Ritchie with 40 votes. I felt better about the Depay thing until I realized that he hadn't actually played the last 4 weeks.
It is a bad omen. I definitely agree with you. And Ritchie plays for A, he plays, B, he's integral to that Bournemouth defense, even, or that Bournemouth offense, even though they cannot score, which is, I guess, the main problem.
Yeah, I will. I think the argument in favor of Ritchie here is that he may not score as many total points as Eden Hazard or even Diego Costa, but given his price and given that you can field him as a fifth midfielder, he can end up actually becoming a top fantasy asset just because of how he slots into your team.
Agreed. I mean,
you know, because Eden Hazard may score a lot of points and become a top fantasy asset, but you're laying out 11 million for him still, or 10.9. So you need him to do even better, you know, in order to, I mean, you know, just the law of prices or something.
That is a law. Look it up. All right. Next category, underrated fantasy asset. Parenthetically, you state less than 10%, ownership.
Yeah. Less than 10% ownership through game week 12. So, that may have been unnecessary, but I just wanted to pick players who, you know, I wanted to define underrated somehow.
Yeah, fair enough.
So these are just players who have the potential to really perform well over the next, let's say, 10 to 15 game weeks or even throughout the rest of the season, who aren't owned by a lot of people. And the runaway winner here, well, okay, sorry, let's run through the answers.
Yeah, before you get to the winner, who was up for contention? We got Scott Dan of Crystal Palace,
yep.
Aruna Kone at Everton, Dusan Tadic, Aurelio Gomez,
and Jorginho Wijnaldum.
The Weej.
The Weej. So the runaway winner, and I have to say, I thought he might win, but I did not think it'd be by quite this degree, is Dusan Tadic, who picked up 44.9% of the vote, 159 votes total, almost 100 more than any other answer.
It is pretty incredible. I definitely voted for Dusan Tadic because I think just based on the conversations that we've had, and I feel like you have a little bit of that personal bias with Dusan Tadic.
It's not even a – no, I like Tadic. I like the way he plays. I don't like to have players on my team who don't always start.
Yeah. I think he's been in the front of my mind because everyone's been investing in Sadio Mane recently. Mm-hmm. And I just don't like Mane as an FPL player right now. While he's not been delivering very consistently, again, yeah, consistency is key. And Tadic, I feel like, is just as viable as Mane right now, and he's cheaper.
Yeah, he's only 7 million, 4 goals, 3 assists on the season. He's on penalties when he plays. You know, so he started 11 out of 12 games this year.
Yeah, I think his pitch time has been a lot more consistent than it was last season. You know, there are lots of questions about what's his relationship like with the manager, but it looks like he is in favor for the moment.
For the moment, right. So, you know, he still only has one goal in his last 5 games, and that was a penalty, 2 assists. But, you know, at that price, I mean, you know, people are still, you know, casting about for an alternative to Payet. I think that Tadic makes a lot of sense there if you don't want to go the – if you're looking for more of a differential option.
Yeah.
Or, like, I know, like, you're looking to get rid of Ayu. Is Tadic a possible option there?
Well, no, because what I need in my midfield now, particularly if I'm looking at Aguero strategies, is I need to downgrade my fifth midfielder, which would be either Mahrez or Ayu, to a benchable midfielder.
And are you really thinking about getting rid of Mahrez? That seems like a
no, gamble, I'm not. So basically, Ayu is the guy, and I need to get somebody who's under 5 million.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So in second place for underrated fantasy asset, Aurelio Gomez for Watford. He had 66 votes. That's 18.6% of the vote. So a lot of Watford fans out there. Gomez has got a lot of clean sheets under his belt this season. And he's only recently reverted to Spurs form.
I wanted a Watford player in there. Didn't quite have the stomach to put Trey Deeney in this. I probably should have.
Right, because he was a colossal FPL fail for you when he was on your squad.
Yeah, for the first 9 weeks of the season. But 2 goals and 3 for Deeney. So I think in general the Watford assets are a little underrated. Not just Gomez and Deeney and even Agallo, really. I mean, Agallo's ownership is still not that high. I think he is, let's see here. Agallo's ownership is 18%. I mean, that's still not, it's not extraordinary. I mean, it's still a huge differential.
Well, it's 18%. A great squad to invest in because there haven't been any wild swings with Watford.
Yeah. And Agallo,
you're not going to get any big surprises.
Deeney sets you back 5.1. Agallo sets you back 5.5. But the defenders in particular, I mean, Yam has had an excellent season and he's still only at 4.6 million. The fixtures coming up for Watford. So they play Man United next week. But then they have a run of Aston Villa, Norwich, Sunderland. So either you bring him in right now.
Get him in.
Wait, because they have a stretch from week 17 to 21 that's pretty awful. They play Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs, Man City, and Southampton. So
you can't like that.
You can't like that. And those are all around the Christmas fixtures, too. So yeah. You might see a little rotation there. So maybe hold off on your Watford players until you get to week 22 or 23.
Yeah. So just behind Gomez is the Wage Wijnaldum with 16.1%. And I think he's still hanging in the hearts and minds of people with that 4-goal game against Norwich.
Yeah, he looks dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I don't think he's well. He had an assist, in the he had the assist on the one goal in the Bournemouth game.
To Perez, who I like to shout down.
Have you come around a little bit on Wijnaldum? I like Wijnaldum. I like the way he plays.
I don't dislike him. I just dislike that Newcastle team. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I guess if you're hunting for a differential, if you catch Newcastle on the right week, then that's great. But I'm too cautious.
Yeah. I mean, their next. Yeah. Well, fair enough. I mean, it does seem a little risky to have any Newcastle player. You just don't totally know what you're going to get.
Yeah. And both of these other guys hovering around 10%, Aruna Kone with actually 11% of the vote, 39 votes. And Scott Dan, no love for Scott Dan. He comes in last with 33 votes.
Yeah, I felt a little bad for old Scott Dan. He's had a really great season. I threw him in there because I felt bad for him.
Hey, I tell you what, Scott Dan got himself on that ballot. He got enough signatures to get into the race.
He was a write-in candidate.
Yeah, we'll see him next time, I'm sure.
Yeah, 2 goals, 1 assist for Dan already. He's priced at 5.2 million. And I know no one really wants to pay that much for a Crystal Palace defender, but 3 clean sheets on the season. He's picked up 9 bonus points. Had some huge returns. He already has 2 double figure game weeks. Very very underrated fantasy asset. He's only owned by 5.2% of the people in the league.
Yeah. All right. The last category on our third of the season always cheating poll: the next manager to be sacked. We're ending on a macabre note here.
So this one was actually very close for a while. I think I actually even texted you on Sunday as I was putting these together.
Yeah, you said it was very tight.
Gary Monk. Okay, so I'll run through the list. Gary Monk, Jose Mourinho, or Jose Mourinho. Do you say Jose or Jose?
I think the pundits would call him Jose, but, mm-hmm. We're in the States and we read it as Jose.
I like that. It's like Roberto Martinez. Yeah. Jose Mourinho, Steve McLaren, Eddie Howe, and Alex Neil. And in the end, the runaway winner was Jose Mourinho with 39% of the votes, 136 votes total. Had 50 more than the second place person, who was Gary Monk, who picked up 85 votes and 24.4% of the total.
I'm predicting that Gary Monk is going to go first. If Jose Mourinho was out, he'd be out by now.
I think it's McLaren all the way. I think McLaren's the next one to go. I also think that there's I haven't even really seen this rumor, but I just have this feeling that David Moyes is going to end up as the next Newcastle manager. Mm-hmm. And I could see, now that he's a free agent.
That's
a
match made in boring heaven.
It really is. I mean, what a perfect fit, though, right? Can't you just see Moyes taking over that squad and being there for like 9 years?
Yeah.
You know, I just like thick and thin. They would never get relegated.
What a world it would be.
I kind of like those Moyes Everton teams.
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
So yeah, Gary Monk finished second. Steve McLaren third with 81 votes.
That Swansea team is in a total nosedive, and Gary Monk, he's got to be over his head.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think Gary Monk has built up a lot of goodwill.
He does as a former player, he has a real legacy there, and I guess that certainly. And then you look at a guy like Steve McLaren, like you're saying, he has no legacy. He has no reputation with the club.
But it's not just the legacy. I mean, it's everything he did last year. I mean, he took a team that's worse than this current team, and they finished in eighth place, the highest finish they ever had in the Premier League. Or maybe it was even sixth. It was. I think it was eighth. But it was, you know, the top of the table with a very weak squad. They lost Boney at the midway point. And so really, he's just had a run of four or five bad games. And I mean, obviously, if they come out of the break and they lose the next four games, he's going to get sacked. But I think they're going to give him at least another 4 or 5 weeks to make it work. And I could definitely see some of these guys getting fired before then.
Yeah.
It was heartening to see Eddie Howe only with something like 3% of the vote.
That's wishful thinking, only 15 people, because he's such a likable guy.
Club legend. I mean, who are they? I actually don't think he'll get fired this year. I think they could finish with 20 points and he's still winning.
Seeing the Bournemouth chairman speak over the weekend, as we mentioned, he had nothing but glowing things to say about Eddie Howe and how was the only guy for the job. And
if they put in, if Tony Pulis moved over to Bournemouth this week and started coaching them starting in game week 13, do you think that Bournemouth stays up this year?
I guess the question for them is their squad has just been decimated, and I don't know that there's anything any manager could do.
That's kind of what I'm driving at. I don't think so either. Why would you fire Eddie Howe? I mean, he's got the support of his players. You know, his club legend brought them up, you know, through their multiple divisions. You know, young, talented man. Everyone thinks he's a good man, you know, right? He's got a great reputation. Terrible injuries. They looked okay before the injuries. So I actually think Eddie Howe's going to last all year.
I hope so. What about Alex Neil though at Norwich?
Yeah,
that's a weird one. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about Alex Neil, to be honest.
He's an interesting guy too. He's actually younger than Eddie Howe. I think he's like only like 33 years old. And I threw him on there just because I wanted a fifth person. I actually think Alex.
You could put Aaron Ramsey up there.
I should have put Aaron Ramsey in there. Alex Neil's had a pretty good season actually, but you could just see things going bad fast, right? And and he hasn't built up that much goodwill with the squad, so you know, you could see Norwich losing, you know, half dozen games in a row, and suddenly you bring in whoever, you bring in whatever, you name the recently fired manager, you know, insert him in that squad.
So this is a lot of data to ingest and to digest. So we're actually going to put this up on our blog at alwayscheating.com, but we have to thank you again, everybody out there who's listening, who voted. It was a lot of fun. I mean, even though Josh had to stay up until all the wee hours of the morning just tabulating these results.
I finally came up with a hack, but I'll tell you about that offline.
Ooh, yeah, let's take that offline. So I guess we'll try this again, maybe two-thirds of the way through the season.
Yeah, do you want to run through a couple of the best moments and worst moments, Brandon?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about these write-in answers that we had. We had two other write-in categories, your best and worst moments of the FPL season so far, and what player in your FPL squad have you had for the shortest period of time?
All right, so we'll just run through. Maybe we'll post more of these on the website.
Can I start with my votes?
Yeah, go for it.
So the guy who was in my squad for the shortest period of time, which was one game week, and I'm not counting any guys who were in my squad for a couple hours during a wild card, Jefferson Montero. I brought him in after the opening Chelsea game when Swansea absolutely gave a masterclass down the wing against Ivanovic. And Montero looked absolutely garbage the very next game, and I brought him out.
Yep.
And my best moment has to be when Pelé scored his goal after getting two assists against Chelsea. That was the moment, as I mentioned on this pod, where I think I scared every man, woman, and child in the building in which I live. I screamed so loud. It was great.
Was that when your wife yelled at you? Was that the moment?
She never yells at me. We have a wonderful marriage. My worst moment was definitely a lot of managers had the same worst moment, leaving Mahrez on the bench when he scored that brace in game week 11.
If there was an overall theme to, I'd say something like 2/3 of the respondees for the best moment, worst moment, it was often the same moment. The best moment was either captaining Aguero during the massive game week 8, mm-hmm. or not captaining Aguero during his game week 8. And then I'd say the runner up was benching Mahrez in game week 11, which seems like a lot of people did. A surprisingly large number of people benched Mahrez in game week 11. I guess, you know, there was that, you know, he'd come off that run of not starting every, you know, he'd bench 1 week and had come in the second half of the next week. But he had looked so good when he came on in that Southampton game that I felt very confident starting him that week. But I certainly understand why a lot of people didn't.
Well, who needs
especially because a lot of people have those five-man midfields right now.
Absolutely. But who needs your worst moment involving Aguero when you're Matt R., you actually triple-captain Sanchez the week before his hat trick? So it was a little too early to that party. And that has to be gutting to watch that play out.
So it seems like most of the triple captains that I have seen are people who had triple captain go wrong. I don't think anybody actually responded
about the guy who's actually in our Hail Cheaters league where his team name is Triple Captain Hazard Week 1.
Yeah, I think in most cases it seems like the triple captain, I'm stressed out to use my triple captain. I'm, you know, maybe I just won't use it this year. I'll save it for next year. Can it carry over? Can I have two triple captains next year?
It's like vacation. It's like vacation days. I roll over. Totally.
Yeah, for the first 3 months of the year, I can use it. Yeah, it seems like it has not gone too well so far. Saving the triple captain for the double game week seems like the way to go, if only to minimize my stress. But the pressure I would feel if I tripped a captain a player in a game, because you just never know, right? I mean, even a Lionel Messi goes, you know, several games without scoring in any given season.
Another worst moment, which I found to be a bit odd, somebody named Mitt R. says Berahino's decline, which I guess that could be a worst moment if you're like Berahino's biggest fan and you're watching this play out over a few months.
Maybe he's a big West Brom fan.
He could be. He mm-hmm. could be. Anyway, that one jumped out at me.
I liked shortest player on my team, Danny L., said, had Colaccini for a week. Turns out he's a wank. Oh, wait. He just said wank. Well, whatever. He's a wank.
Sam C., getting on the Berahino bandwagon, says, shortest player in his squad, Berahino, took a punt, regretted it in the next game week.
Yeah, he also has one of his answer for the best worst was starting the season with three Chelsea players and keeping them way longer than I should have, which is something that it's a theme that you see in these answers, but also something that strikes home on a personal level. Just keeping those Chelsea players. I was struck, by the way, as we went through this, by how much drama we really had in the first 12 weeks of the season. I mean, we are barely at the third of the way mark. We have 26 weeks to go, and it feels like so much has happened already. Anonymous wrote that his worst or her worst moment was taking Wijnaldum out after a series of uninspiring displays, only for him to bang in a hat trick against Norwich that game week.
Hat trick plus one.
Yeah, it was a quad trick, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, well, the commonly known quad trick.
See, and that one, I could feel that one really stinging, you know, because when you have because Wijnaldum at that point was a bit of a differential, and getting four goals from a differential would be like, I've never had that happen to me, but it must be an incredible moment, right? I mean, you probably take a week off your job after something like that. Yeah,
absolutely. See, I'm going to Jamaica.
I can't imagine how excited I'd be. I mean, the only thing would be better than that would be to captain or triple captain. And by the way, should I just be double captain? Because, you know, there's no double captain, right?
I guess if you triple captain, you get triple the points.
Well, that's true.
You're getting too math-minded here.
Yeah, I guess so. There should be a double captain, though, too, where it's 1.5 points or something.
Yeah. Other players kept in the shortest time. You had Jordan Henderson. A lot of these guys are due to injury. Jordan Henderson, yeah. Ross Barkley. Somebody says, Diouf. Shame.
I like John B. It was just a sweet moment. He said best were Kane's goals against Bournemouth. He says, sounds silly, but I had him from the start and kept faith in him. I proved a massive differential in my mini league, which I'm now set in first place thanks to the wins of the Hurricane. I just like that. I like the little, you know, go long. That's the key to getting in a podcast. Right, way too many words. But I agree. There's nothing better than keeping the. This is actually what I hoped would happen with Eden Hazard. One of the reasons I stay with him so long is I kept banking on these returns to come. It was like, you know, having stock in an old legacy company or something. You know, you just keep waiting for the wins to come back around. And it really has happened with Kane. I mean, he's suddenly having this terrific season after being a huge disappointment for, you know, weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
And a lot, I had Kane the first 3 weeks. A lot of people did.
Yeah. I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, a lot of, I would say next to Hazard, the player who appears the most on the, on the shortest time in your squad was Harry Kane.
Yeah. Or
Courtois a lot too.
Making one appearance. I couldn't have predicted it, but Adnan Yanezai actually appears as somebody's player they held for the shortest amount of time. So good on you, Yanezai. You're still relevant here in the FPL.
Another anonymous has two answers, both after my own heart. First one, shortest player on your team was Dave Azpilicueta, Chelsea dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
And best moment was every Friday before a game week begins, such optimism and joy. Worst moment, Saturday morning of every game week.
I feel like that's a pretty good note to end our third of the season.
Yeah. All right, so we'll post some more of those on the website.
But that's awesome. Thanks, guys, for participating. That was a lot of fun. We'll definitely be doing it again, won't we, Josh? Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Shall we get into – let's quickly run through a couple of Twitter questions before we get to the Game Week 13.
Yeah, preview. Yeah. So what did we get at our Twitter feed, which you can find at Hail Cheaters?
All right. So the first one is from let's start from the bottom here. So Dave from Burnley asks, question, Chelsea's next five opponents have conceded 102 goals this season. In this case, are fixtures better than form? This is something that we've talked about a lot when we were running through the answers. And as I was just talking about a minute ago with legacy companies and stock, I mean, their fixtures are fantastic. And this is really it for them. I mean, this it's after an international break. It's a time to reset. You can put the past away.
Yes, it's true. You can. And
I wish Chelsea would step back from that ledge, Brandon. You got to cut that from the podcast.
No, that's going to go. I'm going to cut it and put it right up front.
You should just put it in every like 6 minutes or so.
I would applaud anybody who brought in some Chelsea players after this international break because it could be a good punt. But for me, I'm going to have to see something before I'm ready to invest.
Yeah, I think so too. The problem is they're so expensive.
Yeah, that is the big problem. And I think we talked about this a lot in the last episode about how form is definitely before fixtures in this particular season.
If you had to pick one player to bring in, I guess it probably would be Eden Hazard. No one has the money though, and it's a terrible time to bring in Hazard if you're trying to bring in money for Aguero.
What about just bringing in a defender?
A defender Chelsea would probably make the most sense. I mean, Azpilicueta in particular makes the most sense, right? He's going to start every game week.
Yeah, they're the cheapest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if Jose Mourinho has any tactic that will work over time, it will be a defensive tactic, right?
Yeah, I don't think any of the midfielders or forwards are worth bringing in right now. I mean, Diego Costa has the same price issue that Hazard has. I guess, you know, one interesting thing you could do, you know, if we find out that Sergio Aguero is not quite ready to come back for 2 weeks, you could bring in, you know, and you're worried about Wilfred Boney starting or something like that, or you just don't want to have Boney in your team anymore, which I understand, because I have him on my team and I want to get rid of him. You could bring in a guy like Costa for 2 or 3 weeks, and then you've already got a lot of money tied up in that forward spot, so it's a little easier to bring in Aguero from there, right? You only got to find $2 million as opposed to kind of, you know, having a $7 million striker and trying to, you know, keep in the back of your head this idea that you've got to generate $6 million at some point.
Yeah, it's true. And, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if Hazard or Costa actually put together two or three great game weeks. So right. I guess at our own risk, we follow form over fixture.
Yeah, I don't plan to bring in any of those three. Although Azpilicueta is kind of tempting, to be honest. Yeah. I just don't trust that defense right now. There are too many new – it doesn't seem like it's all clicking, you know? Something – you know, Zuma isn't fitting with that team right now. I don't know. It's inexplicable that defense is so bad this year after looking so phenomenal last year, right? I mean, they had by far the best defense in the league last year.
Yeah. All right, the next question is from visiting supporter at the Away Corner, and he asks, are England internationals historically overvalued in FPL, thinking Dele Alli's price is about to go up? Now, we do have the benefit of hindsight here. Dele Alli did just score and have a second assist today against France.
Yeah.
And I think it's nuts to call him overvalued. He's what, 4.8, 4.9?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think 4.8 maybe. So even if he jumps up to 5 million, he's still, I mean, we've talked about Dele Alli in earlier podcasts. So
yeah,
I think
he is a strong contender for your fifth midfielder.
Yeah. This may have gone up after Alli scored. It was about 5 hours ago, and I guess it was shortly after the match started. But regardless. The question is whether they're historically overvalued. I actually don't think so. I'm always surprised by how you know, gimlet-eyed the FPL people are when it comes to you know, pricing players. I mean, they really just do a great job. It's kind of incredible how infrequently they just totally miss on a player.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of England internationals that would be big time fantasy assets. Like, okay, I'm thinking of Ross Barkley, Nathaniel Klein, Joe Hart.
None of those players are that expensive. I mean, you know, Barkley started at 6.5 in the season. Jordan Henderson started at 7.
Yeah, you're Ryan Masons of this world.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could argue that Harry Kane was overpriced this season.
But that was not due to his England caps. It has to be down to him being a house on fire last season.
Yeah, I mean, how much lower could you have started Kane this year, given what he did last season, even if he did fall off a little bit at the end?
Yeah.
So I don't think so. I mean, and you look at players like
Wayne Rooney, maybe you've got a case there.
Actually, that's true. Wayne Rooney is – yeah. I think I think this is the second year in a row where Wayne Rooney's basically been an unownable player because he's so expensive.
And, were you about to say pig man? It sounded like you were saying Wayne Rooney is dot dot dot, and I thought you were going to say a pig man.
he would be the one counterexample. So maybe they have a blind spot when it comes to Rooney. Although certainly Rooney was amazing for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think in general they're pretty fair, and you know, even if they. Well, I don't think they do, but even if they did, they're certainly doing that for other players as well, right? I mean, you saw, you know, Kevin De Bruyne came in and, you know, he was priced at you know, $10 million right off the bat.
Yeah.
Which to me felt like he was extremely overvalued.
Mm-hmm.
And he has, you know, since proven that to be a, you know, very accurate assessment. So.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All eyes are on you, Jack Butland. What are you going to be priced next season?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the pricing in general, there are very few complaints about the pricing. I mean, even when a player comes good like Jamie Vardy, I don't think you can really blame the pricing too much. I mean, I don't know how much higher you could have priced him at, you know?
All right. Do we have one more question?
Yeah, we have one more question. This one comes from soccercaptains.com.
Hello, Soccer Captains, our good friends.
Our buddy Tim. Well, one friend. There's like a silent person who we have not met before.
Come out of the dark, silent person.
he says, or one of them says, heard some arguments against doubling up with Ozil and Alexis, citing cannibalization of points. He says, I don't buy it. What are your thoughts?
I have Alexis and Ozil in my midfield. I guess I do worry about it. I'm not saying I've got it right. You better follow my lead.
It's worked out remarkably well for you, all things considered.
It has, and the promise is always, and Ozil has been basically picking up the point slack for Sanchez.
Which is fine because his ownership isn't nearly as high as Alexis. So,
if someone
like Alexis doesn't do that well, his ownership among the, you know, top million or whatever is probably something like, you know, 60%.
Yeah. That's an immediate relevant case, but historically, if you just want to go back to last season and look at how many people won their leagues on the back of doubling, tripling up on Southampton defense.
Yep.
there's your case right there for doubling up. Do it.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think that Alexis is a bit of a concern right now. You know, I would have said this even if Wenger had talked about finally giving him a little bit of rest, but he has these moments where he's in the red zone, you know, and just starts to fail a little bit. And his work rate's always really high, but he loses that he's not quite as lethal. And we talked about this a little bit on the last podcast, but I really think that he's a better player with Theo Walcott in the squad. And he can really play off Walcott and float into the space that Walcott is, he's creating with his pace. And
it's true.
So when Walcott comes back, and I don't know when that is going to be, it's still a couple weeks away. He'll be more valuable. And I just think he's too, you can't get rid of Sanchez. I think, I mean, I know that sounds like groupthink, but I mean, he's just such a dangerous player and the Arsenal's fixtures coming up are pretty good. So I don't know. I think you can. I'm certainly in favor of doubling up too. I think a lot of people are planning to do that. I think the Payet to Ozil move is probably the most popular transfer that people are making this week.
Everybody done already did it now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there it is. You can always tweet your questions at Hail Cheaters. And now it is time to step into the Game Week 13 Optimizer.
All right, let's do this.
All right, so God, it feels like it's been so long since we've actually looked at some upcoming fixtures. But
yeah, I thought you were going to say so long since we started the podcast.
It has been a long time since we've been talking.
since we started the podcast, the U.S. and Trinidad came to a 0-0 draw.
Oh, great. Yeah, I know a lot of the England national team fans are beating themselves on the back with chains over there about how sort of mediocre their team is. Listen, you don't know how good you have it.
Yeah, that's true.
The U.S. team just kind of stinks right now.
Not a fun time to be a U.S. men's national team fan.
Okay, but it is a fun time to be an FPL fan because Game Week 13. And let's run through these fixtures. I don't know if I can hype it anymore at this point.
All right. First match is Watford hosting Man United. This is the early morning Saturday fixture.
Boom. What a firecracker.
I know. I don't even plan to have a player in this game. And I still know that I'm going to be up at like 7:30. I'm just going to be so ready to watch some matches.
I am contemplating burning 4 points to get Chris Smalling into my lineup.
Really? Yes. On the road to Watford. That's interesting.
Oh yeah, the high flying Watford.
They find a way, Brandon. They find a way.
They do find a way, but United, it's no secret that they're the best clean sheet money can buy these days. And still, you look at United's run coming up. Okay, Leicester, they know how to score, but then they have West Ham, Bournemouth, Norwich, Stoke. And then you get to Chelsea at December 28th. By then, you're probably not going to be banking on clean sheets. But that is a good enough run for me. And yeah, away to Watford is not scary enough for me to not start my investment now.
And I know you're looking at making some defensive changes, as am I. Yeah, that's an interesting shout. I actually think Watford will score in this game, although it is the early fixture, which is always kind of tends to be a cagier affair. I'll predict a 1-1 draw.
All right, I'm going 2-0 in favor of United. That's my clean. That's my official BK Broilers clean sheet of the week.
What do you think, Juan Mata? Do you think some points for Mata in this game?
Yeah, points for Mata.
And he's on pens too.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know Nyam is going to take somebody down in the box as he's Nyam to do.
He can't Nyam himself.
All right, God, save us.
He can't say Nyam. You cut all this, please. Nyam is dangerous. I agree.
All right, what's next?
All right, next match is Chelsea-Norwich, Chelsea hosting Norwich. So this is the match. If you're thinking about bringing in a Chelsea player, you might as well start this week. I will at least think about bringing in Azpilicueta for this week.
Yeah, you and him have good vibes from earlier in the season.
Well, the thing about Azpilicueta is you can, even if they let in a goal, you can get assist points from Azpilicueta too.
What is his price tag right now?
He's 5.9.
All right. Yeah, so, I mean, he's affordable. Quite a bit cheaper than Chris Smalling, that's for sure.
Yeah, a little more expensive than Kurt Zouma, but I think it's worth it for the security of his starts and for the assist threat, even though Zouma is maybe a little more of a goal threat, and we've seen him on some free kicks. But I still prefer Azpilicueta.
Yeah, this game is a little bit of a letdown for George R. Russell Martin. He's coming off of his missing a match because of a red card for that nutty handball he had against Man City.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody wants to get Martin back on the field, but here he is away to Chelsea. Not a good matchup for Norwich.
I still don't have a beat on this Norwich team. 12 weeks into the season, I don't know how they won that game at home to Swansea. They're hanging around, you know. I mean, they've got 12 points through 12. So if they finish with 38 points, that is almost certainly going to be enough to stay up this year.
Yeah.
And I think they have just enough. And by the way, I didn't talk about this in the last podcast. Dia Mercy Mbeki, my friend
Mbeki,
once again getting it done.
That dude.
And I know that you're excited about this as much as I am.
Who's having a Vardy party? Mbeki's having a Vardy party.
2 goals and 1 assist from Dia Mercy. 5.7.
Can we say hashtag Lord have Dia Mercy?
That was only in 23 minutes, too. I mean, this guy, he is getting it done. I wouldn't be surprised if Dia Mercy Mbeki was priced at 12 by the end of the season.
That's incredible. What, does he play for the England national team? All right, what's next?
All right, so a 2-0 Chelsea win seems about right here.
Yeah, I'd go along with you there.
Yeah, but who knows who the goal scorer.
Actually, I'm going to go 2-1. Norwich scores. 2-1?
Okay. Next match is Everton-Aston Villa. Everton hosting Aston Villa. Feels like Everton has been pretty good at beating up the teams that are worse than them this year. I think this is an easy win for Everton. I'm going to predict a 3-1 Everton win.
Yeah,
I would keep a lot of clean sheets right now.
Yeah, I would agree. They miss Jagielka in the back. The defense, Stones isn't really able to do it all himself. Mm-hmm. And this is also a derby amongst American goalkeepers, Guzan versus Howard, and both of them have had... Yeah. Howard's
been a good goalkeeper versus a bad goalkeeper.
Yeah, it's true. But Howard is no stranger to the one-off howler in any given game.
It's true. It was promising to see Aston Villa play so much better with Remy Gard as their manager. I cannot believe they held that Man City match to a 0-0 draw. I don't know if you watched the match or something.
I did watch the game.
Highlights from it. I mean, man, it seems like Man City really should have won that game.
They should. I mean, De Bruyne missed a sitter. He tried to actually it was a tough ball for him to wrap his foot around. He had to sort of back heel it. Mm-hmm. And you could see he was just so beside himself that he missed it.
Yeah.
City really should have had a hatful of goals.
And then looked like Aston Villa almost nicked one.
It's the classic new manager bounce, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But hey, that's why you have him, right? I mean, picking up a point against Man City for a team like that is...
Yes, it's huge.
Yeah, it's huge.
But would you consider captaining Lukaku here in this game?
I think so. I don't think that the 0-0 draw at home to Man City is enough of a data point for me to be like, oh, that defense has completely tightened up.
Yeah.
Yep. Nothing to worry about there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Lukaku is a pretty good captain choice this week. Next match is Newcastle at home to Leicester.
All right, God, another weird captaincy decision that we have to make here because Mahrez and Vardy coming up against this garbage Newcastle team.
Vardy to me seems like the best captain choice this week. Not only because he didn't play in the internationals, but also because he is going for the record. The 10 scoring 10 games in a row. He's currently tied for the record, and you know that everything is going to be fed through him. They're gonna be trying their asses off to get him a goal in that game.
Yeah, I mean, Mahrez handing off that penalty to him lets you know that A, the fans are behind Vardy, and B, the whole team is behind him.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, Mahrez and Vardy are both interesting options in this game week. But I think that Vardy is the clear favorite here. I think so. I have another difficult goalkeeper dilemma on my hands.
Not learned your lesson yet?
I know. I think I'm just going to start Butland. I know.
Oh, great. So everyone listening out there, that translates to start Kasper Schmeichel on your team.
I mean, certainly Schmeichel at Newcastle, it seems like a better goalkeeping selection than than Butlin at Southampton.
You have both keepers are away, right? So here I'm less interested, if I'm you, I'm less interested in
a clean sheet.
In a clean sheet, I'm more interested in save points.
Yeah,
who do you back there?
I currently have Butlin starting, I will say.
Yeah, I think Pele is going to get chances, and you know he's not like a class finisher. He'll probably put at least 3 or 4 directly at Butlin.
Yeah, it's tempting just to make a goalkeeper transfer. I mean, I think that goalkeeper transfers are actually something you should be considering more often now, given that the second wild card can be played at any time in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
You know, in previous seasons, that is not a move you want to make, because you'd always say, well, let me just get to January, you know, and then once I'm in January, I can look at the next, you know, 16 weeks or whatever, and I can find two goalkeepers that I can basically just rotate the rest of the season. But now, I mean, I may not play my wild card until like the 34th week, you know, or later. And so
you can let it roll over with your triple captain.
Yeah, you can roll it over. So I think that it's actually probably worth it. I mean, you made a goalkeeper transfer a couple weeks ago. I think a pretty good one, actually.
Yeah, I got rid of Fabianski, which that was some sort of weird plot on my part to play a bench boost with two goalkeepers. And I brought in Hennessy at 3.9. So yeah. I made money.
Great pickup. Yeah. Someone you might consider starting this week too, I would think.
Yeah, I have debated that. God, that is a tough one. Bench a heavy hitter like Joe Hart in favor of Hennessy, but it does make sense. Crystal Palace is home. We're getting ahead of ourselves here. Let's run through these fixtures.
Yeah,
we're already talking about the Butlin question. So Southampton Stoke, the Butlin question. Is that like the next Jason Bourne movie?
I'm a little worried about whether Mane will play in this game. I think he'll play, but he did play today for Senegal, and it didn't actually happen the last international break. But in many previous international breaks, Sadio Mane only got like a 24-minute run in.
Yeah.
He did. I think he scored in the first African World Cup qualifier. Yeah. So I mean, he's played well. So I don't know. We'll see. You know, he's
I bet he starts.
Yeah. So I think interesting match. I do think that Southampton will win. I don't know that they'll keep a clean sheet in this game. This is actually probably one of the better clean sheet opportunities this week.
Yeah, should we say this is the Jonathan Franzen, author of Purity's Pure Watch of the Week?
Maybe. I would like to watch more Stoke this year. I have not watched a lot so far.
Yeah. They're on the rise. The rise of Stoke.
The rise of Stoke.
I would agree with you. I would say a 2-1 or a 3-1 victory for Southampton here.
Yeah, that sounds about right. All right, Swansea-Bournemouth.
Interesting matchup for sure. Swansea in a tailspin and Bournemouth in desperate need of a result.
I think that Swansea gets their win. I think they have a nice clean 2-0 win. I think that Gomis finally scores after a long period of
a drought, some might call
miserable
it.
Returns.
Yeah. I don't doubt that. And yet another matchup where I'm loath to get rid of Andre Ayew, even though I have no way to get him onto my team.
Yeah,
into my starting 11.
It's a tough spot. I mean, I think I'd rather have Ayew at home to Bournemouth than even Pele at Stoke. That's how excited I am about Ayew this game week.
Yeah, you're giving me something to think about.
That brings us to the last 3 p.m. fixture, which is West Brom Arsenal.
Okay. there are a lot of cliche things we could say about this matchup, I suppose. Tony Pulis is going to keep it tight, but Arsenal is on a good run of form.
Right.
Honestly, this is a classic game in which Arsenal could not show up.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we'll see if Bellerin is healthy. I think we still don't know yet. If Bellerin is healthy and plays, I think this is a 2-0 Arsenal win. If Bellerin doesn't play, then I still think Arsenal win, but maybe it's more like 2-1. 2-1 or 3-2 or something like that.
So do you think it's worth captaining any Arsenal assets in this game, mainly Sanchez or Ozil?
I really wouldn't. I just... Yeah, just it's too much of a concern about a Pulis team. I mean, like you said, it is cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. They're a tough team to play at home.
Yeah, and it's coming out of the international break and away fixture against a brick wall. It's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, I agree. All right, that brings us to the last game on Saturday, Man City hosting Liverpool.
I'm surprised this wasn't our pure watch of the week.
Yeah, we jumped the gun a little bit. Very interesting match. Hard match to predict because there's a lot of things that are still up in the air. We don't know if Aguero is going to play. We don't know if Boney is fully healthy. We don't know if Jordan Henderson is in yet. Even Benteke, I think he's finally fully healthy, but we'll see. Sakho is now out for Liverpool for 2 or 3 months, which is a big blow.
It is a big blow.
So I think this game can go a lot of different ways. I don't think that Man City is going to blow Liverpool out of the water in this game.
No,
but I do think they'll win.
Yeah, I have a Nathaniel Klein question in this game because I have little faith in Liverpool's defense here, but I'm sticking with Klein for one more week because if you look at Liverpool's run after, they have their home to Swansea, away to Newcastle, then they host West Brom, then they're away to Watford, and then host Leicester. So it's worth sticking with Liverpool defensive assets, though they almost definitely won't come good in this matchup.
I would love to hear that Aguero was back because I could bring him in 2 moves and I'd be happy to burn 4 points to do it. Especially because bringing him back this game week would actually be a bit of a differential. I know that in 2 or 3 weeks everyone will have him again, assuming that he's back and healthy. Mm-hmm. But so we'll see. This one, I feel like this one has to have like an incomplete grade to it because it's too hard to tell right now given all the variables.
What's it going to take for you to get Aguero back this game week? What would satisfy you enough in the media to have you do that?
I would just need Pellegrini to say in a press conference that he was healthy and ready to go. I mean, something close to it. I don't know that we'll have that concrete of an answer, which means I may not bring him in this week.
So I'm curious to see how many people bring him in for this game week. I mean, what percentage of managers? Maybe I'm thinking 10% of managers.
Well, I would not. The thing is, do you want to burn 4 points to bring him in when he may not start?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a big ask, and it's not like they're, you know, if they were home to Bournemouth, then you might think to yourself, sure, I'll bring him in because even if he doesn't come on until the 72nd minute, he could score 2 goals in 20 minutes. But Liverpool is the defense looks a lot better under Klopp, and you know, this game could be another 0-0 draw like Man City played against Man U a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I would be sweating a clean sheet for my man Joe Hart in this game, too. particularly if Benteke is fit and plays a full 90 up front.
Yeah.
I'd say Liverpool looked to be good for a goal.
I would think so, too. I mean, just given how strong they looked against Chelsea.
And Coutinho does love a wonder strike against Man City.
That's true. Although Liverpool also just lost at home to Crystal Palace, so I don't think we really know what we're dealing with yet with that team.
Is the ultimate although team this season.
They kind of are. That brings us to the Sunday fixture. Only one fixture on Sunday this week. It's Spurs at West Ham. Poor West Ham. No Payet for a few months after Everton knocked him out of the picture.
Yeah, did his ankle.
I think that Spurs win this game. I think that Harry Kane scores in this game. I think this is a fairly routine win as West Ham sort of – I know that West Ham have this reputation for their counterattacking style when they play a top team, but I just think that Payet's going to be too much. I think that they will reform and be okay in a couple weeks, but I think it's going to take a while to learn how to play that the player was really directing
like
their
Alex
offense.
Song to get back in their lineup. I do think, Payet is such a big piece holding that team together. I would be worried about my West Ham defensive assets if I had any.
Mm-hmm. You just worry. I mean, you see this with Man City whenever Silva goes down for a few weeks. It takes them a week to remember how to play without that. Without their kind of their
security blanket.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when the U.S. tries to play without Kyle Beckerman.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, so that brings us to the final Beckerman. That brings us to the final fixture. It's on Monday, Crystal Palace, Sunderland. So I have been debating all week what I think is a bit of a differential punt. To me, as good a differential punt as bringing in Jerry D on Everton, which is to I have not made my Payet transfer yet because my team is so. So riddled with injuries that I really had to make sure that no one was down, right. That no one went down in the international break before I made any transfers. So I am moving because I might have had to make even more, and it would have made the calculus a little more complicated. Mm-hmm. So I'm really debating bringing in Johan Kabay for this match because Crystal Palace, their next two home matches are Sunderland and Newcastle back to back. And Kabay is very affordable. And from the money that I would get from downgrading, Payet to Kabay, I would suddenly have enough money to turn either of any of my 8 million strikers into Aguero without making any more moves.
Say what?
That's true. I've got 4 million in the bank right now, and I'd get another 1.5 million or so if I went to Kabay.
Why aren't you getting Scott Dan in for this game? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, Dan's an interesting option too. I may burn 4 to bring in another defender. I just hate doing that. But if I see it as a long-term move, then maybe it's worth it.
Yeah, Crystal Palace, such a funny team. They have just already had weird ups and downs, at least just from a fantasy perspective. They seem like a pretty solid team in the league. But
yeah, great win against at Anfield, a very improbable win.
Yeah. I don't see any reason for me to invest in Crystal Palace right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know which player to get. That's really the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, that's outside of the defenders who are, I think, Dan or even the other defender.
Joel Ward?
Yeah, Joel Ward. Yeah, I think he's down to like 4.4.
Yeah, and he's good for a goal too, that Joel Ward.
Mm-hmm.
I would fear playing you head to head if you had got Kabay in for this game. I'm hesitating a little bit, but yeah, I do like.
Yeah,
the call
I can understand that.
That Crystal Palace is. I mean, if Lee Cattermole is playing for Sunderland here, he's going to take somebody down in the box.
Yeah, one would think, right?
If he's sizing up Wilfred Zaha running at him into the penalty area, Cattermole's going to.
That's a red skate card. Mm-hmm.
And there it is. There's your penalty. There's your Kabay goal.
And there's your podcast, Brandon. That brings us to the end.
That is our podcast. My God, you said to me earlier today, oh, I don't know, I wouldn't mind if it was a 40-minute podcast, and I laughed in your face.
You did.
But I think it was a good one.
3 times that.
I think it was a good one. We were bringing back all of our cheaters from the international break. We're excited to see how you do in the Hail Cheaters mini league. In game week 13. And of course, if you're listening for the first time, it's not too late to join our mini league. You can get the league code at our Twitter page or go to the league page on our website at alwayscheating.com.
All right, Brandon. Well, I will talk to you very soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, Poku forever. Hail cheaters. Subscribe on iTunes.
Brandon, I will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
Bye.